Keep calm, everyone. She's back.
Jawohl!
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're going to be having an author of a book, which is absolutely amazing. We have it right here in the front. It's called Whole Again, and the author's name is Jackson McKenzie. We're going to be having a great conversation with the author on the second part of the show, or on the second half. And as always, my name is Tom, and I am your host, and I'm here with my, well, for the past 4 weeks, I've been here with my co-host, starting with the only one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
I'm kidding, and...
Good to be back with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
So, definitely we want to start with, welcome back, Chris. How are you?
I'm awesome. I'm so happy to be back. I've been looking forward to this.
I know.
We're finally able to tell everyone he is actually pregnant, and that's why he's been out of the office.
So, you know, he's been going through it.
It's been rough. The morning sickness wasn't okay.
It was horrible. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm super happy that he's back, but, you know, we've got him on prenatals, and he's doing really good.
I had my tubes tied. I don't know how anything got in there.
You'd be surprised.
I'll tell you how.
Well, okay.
Half New Haven will tell you how.
That is not true.
So just to be...
I'm leaving.
I missed you.
Just to be clear, you know, when you don't want to have an unexpected pregnancy, you should cut and burn, not just tie.
Cut and burn.
Yeah, because they could untie, and then you can end up, you know, having an egg squeezed through, and next thing you know it,
Nick's born.
Oh, I missed you boys.
Oh, it's so good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. And I'll keep that in mind next time because I decided that I'm going to keep this one. So I'm going to keep this to term.
Will it be named after me?
I was thinking about it.
Okay. I think you should name it Obama.
Obama?
Yeah, maybe the middle name Obama.
Bernie
Obama Mattoon.
That is a name. That is a name right there. Bernie Obama Mattoon. And so I'm going to give a tough birth. I'm going to do a tough birth.
Wait, hold on. Bernie Barack Mattoon.
There you go. I like that.
I like Obama better.
Bernie BBM. Obama. I know. You can call him BBM.
Oh my God! Do you remember BBM?
He's my baby bowel movement
with Blackberries. BBM.
Oh, that's right. I don't remember. I remember having a Blackberry, but I really didn't do BBM.
That was my first smartphone. Blackberries.
Yeah. I never had a Blackberry.
Of course. I don't think you were old enough to have a phone with a BlackBerry.
Yes, I was.
I was super cool in college because I had the flip phone BlackBerry.
I had the Sidekick.
Oh, you would have had a Sidekick.
Oh, she's nasty. Of course. So, oh my God, I'm so happy that everyone's back on the table. It's just wonderful and to see all the laughter, and we've got cocktails and all that good stuff. And speaking of cocktails, Christopher, what are we having? What are we suggesting for people today?
Today, we're going to suggest a classic cocktail, and it's really simple, and it's really good. So today, we're going to be making the Harvey Wallbanger. It's a very simple cocktail. Like I said, it consists of just three simple ingredients. It's 2 ounces of vodka, fresh orange juice.
Are you sure it's not Chris got banged up?
It might be. Okay. It's my first one, so you know, talk to me at the second half of the show. So again, it's 2 ounces of vodka, fresh orange juice, and then it's a 1/2 ounce of Galliano, which is a sweet herbal Italian liqueur. You build this in a Collins glass. You fill 2/3 full of ice, pour in the vodka, add the orange juice, and leave room to float the Galliano at the top. And the funny thing about where it got its name was, if there are any bartenders out there listening, or if I'm sure you guys know, Galliano is that one bottle that no bar ever touches, but every bar has it. Yeah. And it's that really tall,
like
skinny bottle.
Like,
no,
it's like triangular. It's round,
yeah, but
it's
rounded,
like
right.
Yeah.
And it's that really tall yellow liqueur. And every time it's always in the back of the bar. So every time you would go to put it back, you'd bang it up against the wall.
Or everything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Harvey Wallbanger.
Got it. Makes sense now.
So it's almost like
screwdriver.
The iron building in New York City, right? So it goes from like thick to skinny, and it's sort of kind of very tall.
Can't ever keep it nice.
What are you talking about?
Whoa, I lowered myself.
I was talking about the bottle. But anyway, so yeah, it's the Harvey Wallbanger.
Were you talking about the Chrysler building?
No, I was talking about the iron building. It's that building that it's shaped like.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Okay.
It comes into two main arteries of avenues in New York somewhere come together, and this building.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So that's sort of kind of the shape of the bottle. Just go straight up. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. So I'm just going to throw it to you and say, what have you been doing with yourself for the past 4 weeks?
I've just been, you know, trying to take care of myself.
Which is always good.
Yeah, it's been busy. It's been busy. I've been focusing a lot on myself, but things are looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look amazing.
I feel great.
Which is good.
I feel really good. I've been, like you said, I've been really taking care of myself. I'm hopefully trying to get back to being fit again.
Well, just remember, you have to eat for two now, so make sure that you know, you realize that you know it's not just you. You can't just go, you know, vegan. You've got to introduce a lot of different things.
My baby will be well fed.
Okay,
and probably drunk.
Oh yeah, are you supposed to? Am I allowed to drink on this?
You're in your first trimester. Yes. You
okay.
Can.
It's, right. No, you can't. But. You can. It's fine.
I'm kidding.
Still gonna.
Oh my god. So we're gonna get some hate mail from
so many
women.
People.
No. So you know, I just want to tell you first of all, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
We haven't seen you since then, and welcome to 2019.
Yeah, it's an optimistic year.
Awesome,
optimistic year.
I started 2019 off with a broken mirror, so
that's true.
Oh, wait, we didn't talk about that.
No, we're about to. So why don't you tell us how your weekend went?
So my weekend was fine. It was good. I had a good time.
Why do you have a scarf on in the studio, first of all?
Because I'm chilly.
Okay. She's chilly.
And also, I'm covering my double chin, so we're being filmed now.
We're on video now.
She's cold-hearted. There's a difference, but go ahead.
Valid. I worked on New Year's Eve, and it was a really good night. I made decent money. I had a lot of fun.
It's pointed at her.
And then I get to my car after the night's over, and somebody backed into my driver's side mirror.
I don't think they backed into it, first of all.
Okay. No, they must have, like, knocked it off.
So,
or ripped it off.
If somebody would have backed into with another vehicle and knocked your mirror off, you would have had some scrapes on your side. Somebody pulled that shit off.
No, because on the front end of... I thought the same thing, but on the front part of the mirror, it was all scratched up like somebody had hit it. So maybe they hit it off.
With what?
I don't know. It looked like it literally.
With
it was,
a bat?
It was, they were, it was scratches all over the front of the mirror. And then there were scratches on the top where it hit on the ground because it fell off. Mm. So I'm assuming, if somebody ripped it off, proud of you. Whatever. Move on.
Fuck her.
I can afford to get it replaced. No. Anyway, the problem was, I had a great night and it was 2019 and I get in my car and I'm like, pulling out of the fucking lot, and I'm like, it's gone. My mirror is gone.
And I am high as a kite. How the hell am I going to get home right now?
No, and the funny thing about the whole thing is the fact that a couple years ago, we had the staff party, and I probably should not have been driving, but I drove home, and I lost my mirror on the way home. And we were talking about it the night before because we're having another staff party this year and our boss is telling everybody they need to Uber.
That's right.
Because of me.
And there's a reminder in there.
And then, like, literally that night we were talking about it and I get to my car and I'm like, oh, it's gone. Okay. 2019.
Welcome. So just a reminder, because we're having a staff party, I will be in MAL in D.C., the weekend of the 21st, right? That's Monday the 21st.
Oh, Chris doesn't know this.
And Chris is about to find out,
I
right?
am.
Because, you know, we haven't seen him in about three or four weeks. He's going to the holiday party. I will be in DC for MAL, which means we will not be having an episode that week.
On the 22nd.
I will let Chris pick an episode from the last 149 episodes that we've had, or 148, and we will repost that episode as a stand-in or a fill-in for that week.
With the exception that anything from 25 and below, you can't pick.
Yeah, no, those aren't allowed. I wasn't going there anyway.
I'm hoping he picks episode 5, but anyway.
Not a chance.
So, yeah, we are going to repost one episode just to give you guys some content. If you just recently joined us and you haven't really had an opportunity to go all the way back, then Chris will pick an episode and we'll repost it from 2017.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for that. Yeah. That sounds cool.
You get to pick.
Also, can I have your ticket for the staff party since you're not going to be there?
I'm driving up. I may show up. I just don't know what time.
I'm still going to show up. My roommate works there.
Well,
I worked there.
You can be my date.
I worked there.
You can be Steve's date because he was supposed to be mine, but I'm not taking him.
Would you like to be my date?
Everybody wants me right now. Oh, I'm not used to this.
We haven't seen you.
Oh, wait,
forever.
No, I don't want you. Did I say you? No. Oh, wait, I did just offer you. Damn it.
So anyway, we've been going through it, but you know what? We're here. We're all together.
And we're queer.
And that's right.
Your hands are a little moist. What's going on?
My hands are frozen,
too. I had
them
in my ass.
Okay.
Oh, anyway. So listen.
I thought about that, but I didn't even want to joke about it.
We do have a guest, and we do have several stories that we want to talk about. So we're going to jump right into our dish. There's a lot going on. On January 3rd, the 116th Congress was sworn in.
Yes.
On this January 3rd. As we know, the Democratic Party gained a majority in Congress as far as the House of Representatives goes. And it was very historic. There's a lot of first in regards to everything that pretty much happened regarding the people that were elected into office. And there's a lot of LGBT news, LGBTQ plus news, which is why I decided that I wanted to sort of kind of talk about everything that happened. So first off, in the Senate, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, and we had talked about this during our election episode, how historic it was. She is the first bisexual woman, openly bisexual woman, senator ever elected to Congress. She was sworn in by none other than bigoted and homophobic Mike Pence. That made me feel so good. Sinema joins Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat from Wisconsin, who returns to the Senate for a second term as two LGBTQ members that are now part of the U.S. House, the U.S. Senate. And for me, the icing on the cake was that when she took her oath of office, she decided to do it on a law book, not a Bible.
I loved that.
That was amazing. And, you know, Mike Pence.
And she did that right. Yeah.
Actually had to do it. But wait. So she was actually going through it, right? And she's looking down. And I guess they have all these little marks on the floor. And there's a mark for the senator and a mark for the spouse, right? And so she looks at Mike Pence. She goes like, oh, there should be a spouse here. Do we have a spouse in the audience? Anybody want to be my spouse? I died.
Did someone go up?
No.
Oh.
I just died. I was like, you know what? She's having fun with it. She's running with it. She's having a good time with it. And I said, you know what? Congratulations. Balls to you, because you know what? That's what he gets, you know, for being such a bigoted anti-LGBTQ retard.
You'll get there.
Oop. I didn't want to say that.
No, take that back. Take that
he
back.
He didn't even finish the word.
He's an asshole.
Yes.
Yeah,
offender.
He definitely is. Yeah, he definitely is. So, you know, that's not the only thing, though. You know, we had other members of Congress that made history. We have another LGBTQ community member also elected to the House of Representatives, Charisse Davids. She's a Democrat from New Mexico. She is a proudly out lesbian who won her bid to become a congresswoman for that state. Davids also, along with fellow Native American Deb Haaland, became the first Native Americans to ever be elected into Congress.
Their hug was so beautiful.
Crying. Yeah. They cried. And it was so historic, because a lot of people don't realize that the Native American religions that are practiced among Native Americans, didn't become legal until the 1970s. So a lot of these people, are you okay?
Going through it with my scarf.
The scarf's winning.
So a lot of people don't realize that, you know, they have just now started to be able to practice the fact that they are Native American and they can dive into their heritage without being persecuted or without fearing the fact that, you know, they're human just like us. But not only that, they will always only will be human. More American than we will ever be, right? Because they were here first.
And you have to look at the oppressive voting rules that were getting in their way. I believe it was North Carolina where you needed to have a street.
North Dakota.
I was thinking it before I said it, and Carolina came out. You needed to have a street address.
That's right.
On your license.
It never has been that way in the past. But, you know, the Republican Party, of course, they had control at the time. They were putting measures into place that would prohibit or make it harder for American...
For the Native Americans.
Native Americans to be able to actually vote.
Right, because they live on reservations, so there's no...
Street address.
Right, exactly. So this gerrymandering by the Republican Party was to keep them from voting.
I'm so happy you're back.
I'm happy to be here.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I guess I'm not worth anything. So...
I love you, baby girl. I love you. Don't feel bad, Trish. Don't feel bad. So anyway, so that's not all. There's more. There was a lot of first. Listen, in this particular Congress, in this particular 116th Congress of the United States government, anywhere between 45 to 55% of the people that were elected into the House of Representatives are people who identify in some way, shape, or form as a person of color. It has been the highest percentage of people. I believe last session during the 115th Congress, there are about 10% of people that were people who identified as people of color. So to go from 10% to 45 or 55%, anywhere between that range of people that got elected into office, that's a huge milestone. It just goes to show you that when you get someone who's misogynistic, a bigot, and
xenophobic,
and goes into office and starts spewing all this bullshit, it energizes people to go out there and make a move and just completely go out of the way to say, we're not going to stand for this.
So they do what? They shut down the government so that...
For 3 weeks.
So, okay, well...
and more coming.
Well, the government was shut down before the current Congress actually was sworn in.
For
and
a
so
reason.
One of the first things that this Congress did, the House of Representatives, was to try to reopen government.
Right.
They passed six out of the seven bills to reopen the government, and the Senate at this point, which is a Republican-controlled Senate, is refusing to allow any vote on the Senate floor because they fear that the president won't sign them. And I'm like, that's a bullshit, because your job is to put the vote on the floor, get the vote done, send that bill to the president for him to sign, and he can decide whether or not he wants to veto the bill, right?
Right. And if he doesn't, if he vetoes it, it goes back to the Senate.
And then you can pass it with a supermajority.
Exactly.
And then it becomes law anyway.
Right.
Furthermore, if he doesn't decide to do anything with it, and it actually elapses 10 days, it becomes law automatically.
All I can think about right now is that movie, I'm Just a Bill on Capitol Hill. You know what I'm talking about.
I know. I'm blank. It's not Schoolhouse. Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill.
So
love those.
It's just amazing to see all of these new firsts that are coming up. Another one, a Palestinian-American lawyer, Rashida Tlaib. I hope I said that right. Along with Ilhan Omar, become the first ever Muslim women ever elected to Congress here in the U.S.
And that's so important right now.
It really is.
Such a milestone with the Islamophobia
And they were wearing their hijabs, which was amazing.
That's right.
It's fantastic because the Islamophobia has been plaguing this nation since Donald Trump. Well, even before Donald Trump was running for office.
But more so with him.
Right. Well, he really stoked the flames.
That is the ultimate knife in the
Yeah, head. Absolutely. And it's fantastic because, unfortunately, it is important for people of Middle Eastern descent or Muslim people to stand up and defend themselves
right
now, because so many people just hate them and they don't even know who they are.
Exactly.
They don't know anything they stand for. And these people are just standing for Americans. So it's so important and so fantastic that these are now members of our Congress representing us.
Because in some way, shape, or form, they're going to be able to find their voice and lend their voice to others who are in the same predicament, that are experiencing the same biases, the same racism that is bestowed upon a people that in reality, they're peaceful people. You know, aside from some radical shit that happens in certain nations on the other side of the globe, they're peaceful people. You know, and we have to be able to look beyond what the president is spewing out of his mouth to know that these people are human and they deserve a voice.
And they're American.
That's right. And I'm super happy that this happened. So, speaking of Rashida, she actually is currently finding herself in the middle of some controversy amid a video of her at a celebration rally showing, which shows her saying, quote, the following. We're going to go in there and impeach the motherfucker. She got a, there was a lot of backlash, right? A lot of people were saying, oh, you know, she's, that was disrespectful.
I support her.
I support her 100% because guess what? If our president can actually go out into public or go on a bus and say that he is, he can go and kiss on any woman that he wants and grab them by the pussy, why can't she call him a motherfucker? Because that's exactly what he is.
Or shoot someone in New York City and not
in the middle of
Fifth
Avenue.
Yep.
Right? So she apologized. She issued a correction. And this is hysterical. So it reads the following quote. In a correction over the weekend, the liberal congresswoman said the following. It was wrong to yell out, impeach the motherfucker, when I actually meant imprison the motherfucker. Or maybe impeach or imprison and imprison. Or maybe impeach, imprison, and then hang the motherfucker as a traitor. Or maybe impeach, flog, and deport the bastard to Russia, along with his culpable family and all his criminal cabinet members and cronies. In any case, I misspoke. End quote.
Oh, geez.
Think about it.
Oh, geez.
This is a back and forth. Now you have a president that has no.
I just love the balls on her.
I love it. And you know what?
Bigger than Trump. Afraid.
This is what he needs. He needs people to give him his shit right back to him.
So he's scared.
So he can stop.
He's terrified. He's absolutely terrified.
Of course. And he should be. And then, of course, you know, the darling of the Democratic Party, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, became the youngest ever candidate to be elected into Congress. Not only that, she has been very vocal and Republicans are really attacking her for it. Big time.
I know. So are non-Republicans.
I will say this. I love what she stands for. She needs to tone it down.
Yeah. Even if you look at... Now, this is just one story that I was reading about her today, and I believe it was Whoopi Goldberg, and I'm not going to be able to quote it correctly, but Whoopi was saying that
You can try.
She needs to kind of like ease her way into the office and learn the job before you poop on what other people have done. And I quote poop because she's new. She did say that. She did say before you poop on what other people have done because she is very vocal, but she's making some beginner mistakes, which is bringing controversy to her. But that's what we need. We need outspoken people.
Of course.
In Congress right now.
But I think that's what you're going to get right now, though. Like, that's the thing. You're going to get people that are so fired up and they I mean, just like that. Apology. I mean, they're so fired up. They don't care right now. What they want to do is they want to see change. They want to see that asshole out of office, and they want to see our government back to an actual government with checks and balances, which it does not have at this current point.
It does now.
Right. Well, yeah, it does now. And that's why the districts where these people came from voted for them and put them into Washington, D.C.
Right.
So they wanted their vocalness. They wanted them They wanted them to be out there and to speak up, and they wanted them to act the way that they are.
It's funny, though,
she should tone it a bit. But.
It's funny, though. The other day I was talking to somebody. I was like, do you miss the days when everything in your newsfeed was Trump? Because now all it is Alexander or Cortez. Like, that's all it is. It's just...
Here's what I say. She's got the limelight. She's got the spotlight. The eyes of the world are on her at this point. Oof. And you know what, baby girl? Be outspoken. Do what you need to do. Get out there and fight for what you were hired to do. But just, you know, bring it down a notch. It's okay. You're not going to get everything done tomorrow.
Right.
And for me, the problem that I have with her is she's turning everything into a protest, right? every single protest that's on Capitol Hill, she's there. And that's good. Bring it down a notch, girl. Get your feet wet. Get in there. Learn the ropes. You know, there's you got to understand that.
But she might be, she might, yeah, I don't know. I'm
but
like,
she's also
I agree
youngest.
With you. Like, take a deep breath. Take a step back. But at the same time, I'm like,
go for the jugular.
Fucking change it. Yeah. Get in there and make the change that
the
we want to see happen.
When you look at her, she's a radical liberal. She's a Bernie person. She's a Bernie girl. Bernie endorsed her. She is for Medicare for all. She is a true democratic socialist. So that alone is something different. So, and with that, you need to bring the fire with it. You can't come into Congress as a democratic socialist and sit back. You're the voice. You're the youngest. She's the youngest person brought in there. The Mitch McConnells.
She's the youngest person ever elected Congress.
Exactly. So
a
the
congressman
Mitch
or woman. Ever.
The Mitch McConnells and the old white men, they're going to start seeing their way out with these young women, people of color, you know, outspoken prodigies of American, true American heart in politics coming to office.
And to that point, another thing that a lot of people are realizing is that this Congress got younger.
Yeah.
By at least 10 years.
Thank God.
It's so important because they're going to stand up to this demagogue that was thrusted and hijacked the highest office in the world.
That's right. And so, you know, and just to wrap up, because I know, you know, they have stories that
we have to go on break.
Talk
so.
About.
That's true.
The first half was political, but we'll get gay at some point.
Oh, yeah, we will. No, but, you know, it's important. We need to talk about these things. But this last one really moved me. So there's another milestone to be celebrated that comes to us courtesy of House Representative Jennifer Wexton. She is a Democrat from Virginia, and she showed her support for the trans community. She officially took a trans flag, and she put it on the outside of her Capitol Hill office, and she will leave it there for the remainder of her tenure.
That's fantastic.
And it's amazing. And it's a pushback to Trump and his policies and his ability to look at the trans community as a community that he can toy with and play with and use as a means to sort of kind of get the media attention back to him.
He was scapegoating them.
Of course. He was using them as a means to sort of kind of take the heat off the Mueller investigation and everything else that's happened.
And the fact that he suffered in the midterms.
Of course.
I mean, he started this before the midterms, but anything he can throw back onto.
So, you know,
he probably still thinks there's more Republicans in the House.
Yeah, he probably does.
You know, he'll probably end up making a statement at some point. Yeah, we still have control. Good luck with that. But either way, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, this is amazing. Jennifer Wexton, thank you. Thank you for being a voice in some way to the trans community that has been receiving the brunt of this administration from day one.
Especially coming from the southern state.
That's right.
It's important.
So that being said, I am done. Congratulations to all the winners. Congratulations to the Democratic Party for regaining control of the House and for Nancy Pelosi for being the first woman ever to be elected Speaker of a House and then to be reelected Speaker of a House. Two terms, one woman. It's never been done before. There's only been two other individuals that have actually had a repeat attempt at being Speaker of the House, and she is now among one of the elites. So congrats to her.
Yeah. We look forward to her hard work.
I'm done. I'm going to go like lay back and breathe for a little bit.
I mean, we should probably take a break because we have a guest coming on. But I mean, that was a perfect segue into Chris's story.
That is
so why
true.
Don't we do that
so
real
I'm just going to run. We'll just run through it real
All
quick.
Right, go for it.
Yeah. So I got the story off The Advocate. I was actually able to watch Nancy Pelosi being the gavel being handed to her. As
I watched
she became,
the whole 3-hour thing.
I wasn't able to because I don't have cable right now. So a day after taking the gavel, once again, as U.S. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi reaffirmed her commitment to passing the Equality Act, which was legislation that would put into place federal non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ citizens.
Told you I'd get gay again.
Exactly. So we brought it back. We brought
which,
it back.
By the way, Obama had actually pushed through as an executive order.
Right.
She made it legislation. However, it still needs to go to the Senate.
And then to the president, should it pass there. So the Equality Act, and this is from The Advocate, the Equality Act would extend civil rights and protections now enjoyed by other marginalized populations like racial majorities. It would mean no U.S. company could fire an individual based on their sexual orientation, for example. The legislation would likely also include housing protections for LGBTQ people, So LGBTQ people can't be evicted or denied a mortgage because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. And yes, that's the scary part about this was it's definitely going to pass through the House. Mm-hmm. The House will pass such protections for Americans.
Of course.
These civil right protections for Americans. It's scary thinking how it's going to go with the Senate, though. I believe, is it 54 Republicans?
Well, right now it's 52-48, I believe.
Okay. It's scary thinking about how it's going to show up on the Senate floor. And obviously, they're not going to be taking any bills right now. You know, they're just going to push everything aside. And then should it pass in the Senate, then it's scary if Trump is going to ever sign it.
That pisses me off. I think that when the House passes a bill, the Senate should
vote on it.
Vote on it.
Vote on it.
Every fucking bill. Doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if you have two senators that are going to vote yay for it or nay for it. It should actually go to the floor to vote. Mm-hmm. This whole thing about actually creating a bill and voting on it in committee first before it actually goes to the floor is bullshit. It seriously is. Because the Senate can just sit back and say, well, I'm not going to vote on it because the president's definitely not going to sign it. So why am I wasting my time? No, motherfucker, you're there because we're paying you. So I don't care if you think you're wasting your time. You go into that chamber and you vote that motherfucking bill, yay or nay, and then let the president be the one to decide whether or not he's going to pass or not pass it.
It's going to be interesting, Trish.
I have nothing to say. I just find it funny that there were all these bills that were voted on behind closed doors this
right.
year,
uh-huh.
and now they're not going to vote on something that's about, you know, human rights. So.
Yep. Yeah.
So
yeah,
we shall see how everything plays out. You know, again, it just makes me a little bit more comfortable to know that we do have some sort of check on the balances portion of our, you know, democracy.
Right. And before we go on break, I just want to throw one more thing out there. It's not political, but it's in Washington. So I just want to say, everyone, if you're religious, send your prayers. If you're not, send your thoughts and your energy for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Because yes. today was the first time she wasn't there for oral arguments.
Ever.
Since 1993 when she took to
20 plus years.
Yeah. Since 93 when Clinton put her on the Supreme Court.
Yep.
She is reading over documents. Yep. She's continuing to work from home or
well, obviously she's still recovering from a major surgery.
Right, exactly. So everyone send your love.
So I
RBG. Just
buy one of those dolls, man. I walked into my coworker's office and she had a Ruth Bader Ginsburg doll and she's like,
"Did you steal
it?" Oh yeah,
it?
No, I bought it.
Did you steal it?
No, I didn't steal it. She was like, "I bought it." I'm like, "I'm going to buy my ass one."
Exactly. I want an RBG wait. Action
like,
figure.
Oh, that's right. Well, what's better in your office than RBG action figures?
Yeah, Come on, that for her, it can't be called a doll. That is an action figure.
She's a superhero.
She is a superhero, exactly.
Fuck you, Wonder Woman.
You just pissed a lot of people off.
You sure did.
I am Wonder Woman.
That's right. She twirls. She definitely twirls like her. All right. So listen, on that note, thank you so much for joining us for the first half. I'm going to play you guys some music. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, Jackson McKenzie will join us again for this amazing book that's sitting right here with us. Hole Again. With a W. We're not talking about her hole. Hole Again. It's a very, very, very intense book. There's a lot to cover on this book. We're going to have the author speaking with us. It's going to be amazing. Stick around. We will be right back.
My head gets caught in the moment, but my heart doesn't know it. Heart doesn't know. Do I fall in love? 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 Do I fall in love?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was a little bit of We Need to Be Loved by the incredible Anthony Starbull. We also had Dance With Me by Davis Mallory. And it has been a very, very hectic first half of the show. And
it's because Chris is back.
I'm back.
Jesus.
I've got a lot to say.
You know, as always, we are having a special guest on the show. And it's always wonderful to be able to actually speak to people who actually do the art and do the work and put a lot of what we're talking about on the show into a paperback or a digital format. And of course, today we're going to be talking about Whole Again, which is a book by none other than Jackson McKenzie, which is our guest tonight. I would like to welcome you to the show and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
It is absolutely amazing to be able to actually speak with you because you wrote this amazing book. We're going to introduce ourselves so you know who you're talking to on the show. So I'll let you start.
Well, that's Tom, right?
I'm Tom. I'm the producer of the show.
So I guess he'll start.
I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And hi, welcome.
Guys. Hi, your book has destroyed my life. Thank you.
Great. Mission accomplished.
Literally.
Like, how can I destroy Trish? I know there's a Trish out there I need to fuck up.
Yeah, well, she did it. No, so we talked a little bit about it last week. It's, wow, it's powerful. I mean, it's one of those books you have to be ready for, I feel like. But I wanted to ask you what, before we get into this book itself, you talk a lot about what brought you to it, what brought you to the book, and there were a series of books prior to this book, and I would like you to talk a little bit about that before we dive into Hole again.
Yeah, sure. So the first book actually is called Psychopath Free. It's a little dramatic, but it's it was actually from personal experience. I wrote it after I had just come out to my family and friends in freshman year of college and entered my first romantic relationship. And needless to say, from the title of the book, it didn't go too well.
So, we've all been there, though.
So, yeah, exactly. And it just it was an extremely confusing time in my life, and definitely a dark time. But there were a lot of resources and communities out there who offered help that really resonated with exactly what I was going through, and they helped me a lot. And so I wanted to make sure I gave back, and that's why I started writing these books.
So in the book, you talk a lot about, and I know I don't want to make you rehash anything from your past, but you talk about going through what you went through to get to writing this book. And in the book, you talk about your journey in which you were lost, basically. You were struggling and you didn't know exactly like how to come out from it. You know what I mean? And you found I think it was your mother. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Your mother, yeah. Who, sorry if I'm spoiling anything,
go for it.
If your mother, your mother, like kind of like gave you some tools, to help you through this process. And that's what actually sparked, the whole journey into this book, correct?
Yeah, exactly. She was the first person who kind of got me into the, mindfulness aspect of, healing and recovery. 'Cause for the longest time, I had this kind of like tight feeling in my heart that I described in the book, and I was convinced that it was a physical malady and that there was nothing wrong up here. So the idea of mindfulness didn't make any sense to me, because I was like, well, my mind is fine. I don't think about the relationship anymore. It was ages ago. There's just something up with my body. But doctors confirmed that that was not the case. So when my mom gave me that book and showed me a page earmarked about a woman describing a tightness in her chest, I was like, all right, I guess I should give this one a chance.
So when you talk about the tightness in your heart or your chest, what are you actually talking about? And I know that through the book, you talk about people that you're working with, and you talk about the tightness in theirs as well. And I would like you to expand on that a little bit. What does that actually mean? And why is that so important to this book?
So really the, day after that, first relationship ended, I felt that, tight squeezing feeling. And it wasn't like, we've all felt heartbreak and things like that. And it wasn't that. I really couldn't describe it. And it didn't really matter who I told or what help I tried to get for it. It made no difference. It was just there 24/7. And from the second I woke up to the second I went to sleep, it didn't really matter what I was thinking about. Or doing, but it really lingered and sort of freaked me out because I had no idea what it was.
Right. So when in the book itself, you talk about a whole slew of different situations in which you find yourself, whether it's C, PTSD, cluster B, borderline, codependent. There are all these different types of relationships that we find ourselves in as individuals, and how to work yourself through. I was hoping, I don't know if you would be willing to share, what do you feel like you identified with most, and how did you get to that point where you're like, okay, this is actually what I went through, and then actually heal from it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I like many people in this community, I identified with a lot of the patterns of a narcissistic relationship. I think probably everyone has been through or knows someone who's been through either a friendship or a relationship like this, where usually it starts with really intense idolization. Like, you're the best person I've ever met. We have so much in common. You're my soulmate. You're perfect. You're flawless. It's kind of like a mirror image of you. And not just the good stuff. Also, we have the same insecurities and the same fears and all that stuff. And so the relationships move really quickly. And you kind of tend to lose yourself in them a little bit. And so then, but because people who attach that quickly tend to also detach just as quickly, they usually tend to go sour and devolve into a lot of manipulation and gaslighting, telling you that your perception of reality is incorrect, and that kind of like emotional abuse that tends to cause some long-term psychological damage. Mm-hmm. And really what I resonated with in the book, I described someone who obviously had some avoidant qualities. I spent a lot of time in my head and my imagination. I went from spending tons of time with friends and a pretty active social life towards mostly just isolating myself completely. I'd kind of just like go down to the Charles River and watch the sunset and listen to music and think of story ideas, and just like lived in La La Land for the better part of a few years, and didn't really notice that that was different, but definitely was a change from before.
So can I ask a question? So you went through all these experiences, and then it came time to put them all on paper or on a typewriter or word processor.
A typewriter? A
computer?
I am an
older lady. We know.
She's from the 1880s.
I can't with them. But okay, so you it came time to put all this on paper. And so obviously when you do that, you have to sort of kind of dig into those emotions. You have to go back in there and say, okay, this is what I've experienced, and sort of kind of put that on paper.
Yeah.
How was that process for you? To have to relive all those experiences, to be able to share that in a way that people could actually take your material and then say, okay, this can help me. How were you able to actually take your experiences and translate them into a format in which people could relate?
So I think one of the biggest things is because of the readership of the first book, I ended up talking with thousands of different people from around the world and their experiences. And it was really important to me to write a book that was not like a memoir about myself. I'm not that interesting. But the people I worked with were really interesting. And I wanted to make sure that the book resonated with the readers and helped the readers. Really when I became inspired to write this book was actually not because of upsetting feelings, but it was because it was the first time I had felt really wonderful feelings. And I remember distinctly thinking, oh my God, I want every single person that I've worked with or has been through this to feel this sensation, because it was the first time that tight feeling had transformed into this like super light, tingly, open, freeing feeling, and sort of started staying that way. So as opposed to some of the, like you were mentioning, the more difficult feelings and memories, definitely stay with a person. I think whether it be a relationship or a difficult childhood, the wounds that we experience throughout life sometimes can stick with us, especially when they're strong ones from trusted caregivers. So my story is about a relationship, but you can see a lot of similar things happen where maybe a kid who grows up with a parent who's not paying attention to them or neglecting them, or parents who fight all the time and the kid kind of learns to be a caretaker and diffuse situations. Those all cause really similar types of damage, just like a relationship maybe with someone who's kind of disordered and cheats on you and then rubs that in your face and tells you that they're much happier with that person. We tend to absorb messages about ourselves, just like those childhood experiences, like maybe I'm inadequate or I'm not enough or other people are better than me, those kinds of things. And as soon as that wound takes place inside of us, a lot of other things start to shift.
So, you know, when we started this conversation, I said that this is a book that you have to be prepared for. The reason I said that was because when I was reading this book, and we all know, I mean, if you're a listener of the show, we all know that I've been through it and we all have had our experiences
many times over.
But in this book, you talk about a couple different types of, syndromes, or not syndromes, but like scenarios, like the perfectionist, the cluster B, codependency, C, PTSD, avoidance, borderline. And then when I'm reading this book, I find myself identifying in different ways in each category almost. And then it's almost as if you're not judging yourself, but then you're trying to figure out, okay, where do I land with all of this? How do I go through this book? How do our listeners go through this book and read it? And in a healthy way say, okay, maybe I need to go see somebody, or I'm actually identifying with this because, do you know what I'm saying? And if you... this is a loaded question, but it would also be great to kind of extrapolate a little bit about all of those different little categories.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great thing, because in the first step, being able to identify those things, if we can't identify maybe where we fit in, it's really hard. And sometimes when we, like, a lot of people that I've worked with maybe lack initially that awareness of, like, we might not even know that I'm being a perfectionist or that I'm being a workaholic. Sometimes we take pride in those things and we say, this is who I am. This is my personality. I'm just this hyperachiever, or I take care of other people and I help people and I save them. Those are all kind of things that maybe we see as a good thing. So it's hard to take a step back and think that they actually might maybe not be super healthy for us. Like when I mentioned me out on the dock every day listening to music in La La Land, I thought that was cool. And I was having a great time as far as I knew, except for like a little bit of tightness in here. Right. And so it was that total lack of awareness that I had. And I think as soon as we start to resonate and see like, oh yeah, I do maybe kind of overtake care of people, or I have these like extreme emotional outbursts, I rely on other people, those kinds of things, I feel like that's just the beginning of all healing, especially if we are perfectionistic. We may have a tendency to approach healing from that perfectionistic lens, which can be really tough, because we may start being really analytical or judgmental, or I shouldn't be doing this, or why do I do this, or what's wrong with me? And I think mindfulness is actually one of the best tools for just noticing how we're approaching that healing, and hearing that voice that says maybe it's really analytical or judgmental, or maybe it's this voice of extreme victimhood, like these horrible things have happened to me and it's not fair. Mm-hmm. And it's just noticing those things and not categorizing them as good or bad or needing them to fall into a bucket. Really just noticing, I think, is the first step.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you after reading your book. That
I do have to tell you, by the way, you wrote that book. That's his life.
No, it's not exactly my life. But I did love reading it, but
yeah, I got a couple of screenshots exactly, and you're like, oh my God.
So now I lost my train of thought. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. But, that's what I'm back for.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about each of these little items, though. There's the perfectionist. Like, what are these things and what do they mean? And like, how you know you're experiencing those situations, like a cluster B relationship or PTSD from a relationship. Because I know that when you read this book, whether you had a terrible relationship or not, you will be able to identify with each and every single situation within this book, because no matter who you're with, everybody has their baggage, right?
That's right.
So I think it's important that you kind of extrapolate a little bit about what is PTSD in a relationship? What does it mean to be to have borderline personality, and what that looks like in a relationship, or codependency, or a cluster B relationship? I think those are really important things to kind of hit on to get people interested in reading this book.
And especially PTSD, because, you know, a lot of people associate PTSD with someone, for example, being a soldier, going out to war and coming back home and saying, you know, this is what I experienced out in the field. And then when I'm back home, this is what I'm reminded of. This is what I go through. And so to hear that term used from a relationship standpoint is not something that I've ever heard before. So I'm definitely interested in learning a little bit more about that.
Because it definitely does happen. But like you said, it's the connotation with PTSD makes you think of a traumatic situation, whether it be wartime or natural disasters, but it can be from a personal relationship.
And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, a personal relationship, depending on the severity of the issues that are encompassed within that relationship, could be that traumatic to the point where you could end up with PTSD. But I would love to hear a little bit more about that from you.
Yeah, let's definitely start then with PTSD. And specifically in the book, I talk a lot about complex PTSD, mm-hmm. Which really deals with certain emotions and body sensations that can come up after a relationship or a very difficult childhood, those kinds of things. Like you said, PTSD is really associated with war and soldiers, but it's extremely common, especially after an abusive relationship, to see a person suffer from very similar symptoms. There's some really good charts out there, actually, that show the overlap of the symptoms between traditional PTSD and complex PTSD. But you'll see common things like hypervigilance, depression, anxiety and fear, moodiness. And if you think about, if you've been in an abusive relationship where someone is, and I'm not just talking physical harm, but maybe an emotional abuse where the person is manipulating you and telling you that you're wrong and crazy, and you're maybe absorbing those things about yourself to the point where you almost forget who you are, and that person doesn't seem to feel much remorse for it. Once you get out of that, your body is in this like heightened state of alert. It's always ready for conflict. It's always ready to be attacked. It's always waiting to defend itself because it is anticipating conflict. And sometimes that can die down a little bit, and then you get into your next relationship and you find that the person, they might be the nicest person on the planet, but they do something maybe totally unrelated to that previous relationship that you had. And you find all of those reactions and thoughts in your mind burning up all of a sudden, taking over. And
it's like a trigger. I call that exactly, getting plugged in.
Yep, exactly. That's a great way to put it, because you really suddenly feel like this adrenaline surge where you're like, I'm in danger, something bad is happening, and I need to get away from this. And that can be really challenging both for the person having that and their partner, because their partner might be like, well, I don't even know what I just did to cause this. It's really can be a struggle for the person until they take some steps to resolve that.
Can you talk a little bit about what cluster B actually means?
Yeah. So that was all pretty much all what my first book was about, was it was about the cluster B disorders, which are in the DSM. They're the psychological disorders of emotion, drama, and attachment. And so they are sociopaths, narcissists, borderline personality disorder, and histrionic personality. I think narcissists and sociopaths now are the words are said so often that they've kind of lost their meaning, but
yeah,
they do have a really particular set of patterns, specifically in interpersonal relationships, not just with romantic partners, but friends and coworkers. They tend to be very exploitative. They have a constant need for attention and adoration and praise. And that's why relationships with them, especially in the beginning, kind of feel like this Peter Pan honeymoon phase, because they want everything to be perfect and amazing, and they love you so much, and you're kind of on cloud nine with them. And
shut the fuck up.
Not you. Yeah, I was like, hold on. Yeah, you saw the look, right?
Our listeners can't see me swearing off one of my co-hosts.
I feel you.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's definitely, it's a frustrating thing to look back on. And those relationships, it's just kind of like clockwork. They're the same thing, rinse and repeat with every person. Borderline is similar in a lot of ways, different in a lot of ways too. In addition to the attention seeking, you'll actually see sympathy seeking is really common. It is more commonly associated with women. I don't know the exact numbers on that, but there is, in addition to like the you're so great, there's like all of my exes were abusive and my childhood was abusive and traumatic, and you're saving me and you're rescuing me, and I've never met anyone like you in my life, and I'm so glad I met you because you'll never hurt me like all the other people that hurt me. Maybe those things like come up slowly over the course of like a year with a partner or something, but I'm talking like
until
first
it happens,
or second
right.
date with a borderline, is that's what it sounds like. Latch on really, really fast. And for people who have codependent qualities, that's kind of like the perfect storm, because codependents are all about rescuing and saving people. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see how that dance happens really easily.
So I'm going to ask, this is a weird question. So when I was reading the book, as we clearly have already stated, she's damaged. But like when you're reading the book, you identify with a lot of different, if you've had a lot of relationships in your life.
I got a phone call and
he was
this like, is not therapy, Tom.
No, no, no. I know it's not therapy, but I got a phone call. I'm like, all right, I'm reading this book and I'm like, I'm starting to like really go through a lot of these scenarios. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is this. Most of these could, if not all, apply.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form. But go ahead.
So anyway, let's just throw it all out there.
Give me the book so that our viewers can actually see what the book is.
I think something that's really important is when, like, I'm trying to articulate this. You're going to identify a lot. I think if you've been in a toxic relationship, you're going to identify with a lot of things that have happened in this book or that happen within this book. A lot of personality traits or a lot of situations. But how do you go through this book in a healthy way? And not identify with something to the extreme at which, okay, this is my situation. All right, so, oh, maybe I have borderline personality, or maybe I have cluster B. Like, how do you move through this book in that positive, I'm trying to heal myself and figure things out way?
Yeah, it's sort of like you look at, like, when people give astrology signs, anyone can resonate with any of them. So you'd think, like, oh, wow, that's me. And I think the same thing would be true of this book, is that at any point in our lives, we may resonate with certain qualities, especially one of the most common things after a narcissistic relationship is that the victim or survivor of that relationship takes on a lot of borderline traits. And they're often misdiagnosed after those relationships because they're acting so angrily and hysterically because they've been betrayed, because they've been hurt. And that's completely normal. And so with this book, what I don't want anyone to do is go through and like label themselves with all these mental disorders and think there's something wrong with them. Because first of all, I'm not a therapist. And second of all, the whole point of the book is that there is nothing wrong with us. And that really the biggest thing that we do when we identify these behaviors is that we become aware of them in a kind observation, not a like, holy crap, like I'm defective, because really that's like the underlying shame that causes all of those behaviors and symptoms that I'm trying to get people aware of. So
like, I really wish that this book came in Spanish, because
your family,
I could give it to my mother. You know, my mother suffered a lot at the hands of my sperm donor. If we want to call it
that. For lack of better term.
You know, she was beaten. She was, you know, belittled, destroyed. He took everything from her self-esteem to her self-worth, everything. And a lot of the things that are described in this book is some of the things that I seen my mother do or experience or go through. And it's like, you know, when you start to think of yourself as, okay, well, I'm doing this as a result of what I experienced, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and then years later, she realizes, why did I even bother doing that? It's right. Like, you know, I left it all behind, but, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, for the past 25 years, she found a man that has been absolutely amazing for her and that has dealt with her issues as a result of her previous relationship and that managed to come out on the other side okay. But it was a lot of work. And if she were able to read this and sort of kind of look back, she would probably be able to reflect in a way and say, wow, it's like, I didn't realize that this is what I was doing, but I'm glad that this is no longer the case. Mm-hmm. And that I came out of it, you know, with a positive outcome, but she had to go through it without having someone really describe, here's what you were going through and you didn't even know it.
Right.
And, you know, and you're talking and you're saying all these things, and I'm really like looking back and thinking back and looking at my mom and saying, oh my God, you know, she went through this. She did X, she did Y, she did Z. And I seen it all and didn't really recognize it in a way. Like, for example, my mom experienced PTSD. I would have never thought that's what she was going through as a result of her previous relationship. It's incredible.
I don't know if you want to respond.
Amazing. I'm just so glad to hear that your mom found love and happiness. It sounds like she really deserved it. So that's just great when you see people thrive after that.
Thank you. It's been an experience for all of us, you know, for my siblings, myself, and of course my mom. But she's been, you know, to see her today is really, how would I say, a testament to her strength.
Yeah.
And everything that she had to go through to get to where she is today. Mm-hmm. But if she knew half of the things that are described in this book as part of being symptoms of what she went through and that it wasn't her fault, it was as a result mm-hmm. of what she was exposed to, it would have really changed her life a lot longer.
Yeah.
A lot earlier.
It still can, though.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I would have not known cooking
like that.
I am not going
to read that book in Spanish.
I would have not known cooking like that. If your mother didn't get to where she is today.
Right?
That food is so good.
My mom's food is delicious. Do you know, it's like, you know, to go through this book and try to translate it to her in Spanish, I would probably die.
Yeah, she would just be like, ready for dinner?
Yeah.
I'll let my publisher know. I think they translated the last book into like 10 different languages, so hopefully we can get it in Spanish this one.
Perfect.
So, that would be amazing. Yeah.
I have a couple more things I want to talk about, if that's okay.
Listen, this conversation is very amazing and intense. You have all the time.
I told everybody on the show today, I'm like, this is going to be an intense one.
really lighthearted stuff.
So in the book, you talk a lot about the protective self. So the protective self within the book, basically what that means is it's describing what your body does after you go through a trauma. So you're protecting or sealing off the hurt. And I want you to talk a little bit about how you break through back and open that wound again, because that's basically in the book. You're talking about reopening a wound that you've been sealing off for a long time. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about what that process is like and why it's so important to heal it with love.
Yeah, absolutely. We live in a world of triggers everywhere, like trigger warnings and so it's sort of a weird thing in this book. It actually like encourages triggers, obviously, in a really safe environment with a trusted loved one or a therapist. But the idea being that when we numb out a part of who we are and our experience, we are disconnected and fractured from who we really are. And we can't magically just make it go away. We have to work through that. And so the protective self, in psychology, it's like the false self. In spirituality, it's the ego. They're all the same concept. It's this part of ourselves, almost this like controlling, distracting part of ourselves that is avoiding the pain and keeping us kind of like a hamster on a wheel, just moving, 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 thinking, doing what's next, what's next. And with the mindfulness is where we notice that. And then the next part is just basically declining what the compulsions that it gives. So for an alcoholic or an addict, that's really like drug use. It's declining to do those things. Right. But just as you know, with anyone who goes through like AA or something like that, they don't just stop doing drugs or alcohol and then feel good. The reason they're doing drugs and alcohol most of the time is because they feel bad. So you can get rid of the symptom that's causing them a lot of damage, but they're still going to have that inner agitation. And so the same thing holds true for all of these other things. If you take a lot of pride, maybe in like rescuing and saving other people, or these workaholics who are all about their accomplishments and how much money they make, it's not about throwing away your life and moving to the ashram and becoming like the Buddha. I mean, feel free to do that.
If that's what you want.
But it's really like just kind of taking an inventory of what's going on and why we're moving so fast, and what would happen if we would slow down? What would we have to feel? And even if what we're feeling is this vague numbness or emptiness or tightness, that's okay. That's just what we're going to feel for now. It's uncomfortable, and we don't know why it may be that it's there, but we don't necessarily approach it with that very like almost attacky type of mentality that the ego gives, which is that judgmental analytical thing. It's like, I must do this because of this, and therefore that. It's like a computer program. It's more just like sitting and actually feeling the feelings. And if the feeling itself is numbness, then that's what it is. And that's all we stay with. And I guarantee that the longer we do that and the more comfortable we get with it, the more comfortable our body eventually becomes exposing that wound to us.
So you've said that you've worked with many people and that you work with people. You're not a therapist. You've put that out there in the book, but also on the podcast. But I think it's, what would you, so if you're encountering somebody for the first time that wants to work with you, and they have clearly a wound or the numbness that you talk about or the tightness that you talk about. How would you go about having a conversation with somebody and saying, all right, well, because in the book, he kind of gives examples of conversations that he's had with individuals. And I think it's important that we share that with people so that they know that they're not just going to walk away with, oh, these are your diagnoses. This is actually how we work through things. So I think it's important that we talk a little bit about that as well.
Sure. Yeah. The people that I've, when I say work with, definitely not any sort of practice or payment or anything like that. It's really, in these different communities, I tend to just share articles or post their thoughts anonymously. And when people reach out, if they resonate with something, I'll always reply back. And then if I think that their story may be helpful to other people, I just ask if it's something they'd be willing to have in like the book or as another article anonymously again. And most people are more than happy to do that because by that point, they're usually feeling a lot better. But I think what I always start with is that focus on the body. I think we give way too much credit to the mind right now, where that's really where everything is going on all the time. And it's really hard to have a conversation with someone towards healing when they're so focused on determining what's wrong with them or what's wrong with the people in their lives or what the cause is and all of that. And that's really why I try to encourage that body mindfulness, because we turn away from the story and instead move into the feelings that are going on. We don't think our way into feelings. We just spend some time there and really start experiencing what's going on. And I think one of my favorite authors about mindfulness is Tara Brach. And what I love is her quote, "real but not true." Because if we pretend that something's not happening, that's how we end up with all these issues. But right. Because we can't say, oh, this isn't happening. It is real. It's there. It's something we are experiencing. But the idea that maybe it's not true makes it a lot less scary. Like if you think about your worst fear, the thing that maybe bubbles over in a trigger, like, oh my God, what if it's all my fault? Or what if I'm the bad thing? Or I'm evil? Or even like there's the most horrible things, even thoughts you have about other people. And if you just allow those thoughts to come in and don't associate with that, with something being wrong with you, it all starts to unravel. You sort of just act like a friendly friend of a crazy roommate. And then you start to identify less and less with right. the crazy roommate. Yeah.
You know, until he moves out. So this is clearly a gay show, as you know. Mm-hmm. Gay talk, hello. and I think it's important for, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like in the LGBTQ community, because a lot of people are so broken and have been through so much trauma, we feel as though this probably happens a lot within our community and we don't talk about it. And I think it's important that this book speaks, I think, very much to all communities, but specifically the LGBTQ community. And I was wondering if when writing this book, there was any thoughts that went into the fact that so many people within our community are going to be healed from this or can be healed from this.
I really hope so. I 100% agree with your assessment. We have a nonprofit for helping to get the word out there for people who've been through this. And I dedicate a solid chunk of those funds every month towards specifically reaching LGBT people, especially youth. Because like you said, it is really common, and there are kids who have come from broken homes or from parents who didn't accept them. And the bottom line is, for me, I was really lucky to have a family that accepted me. But I know that when we're rejected by our own families, our own flesh and blood, or people that are supposed to love and care for us, that's really one of those places where those wounds can seep in and start to damage our self-esteem and our self-worth, to the point where suddenly we find ourselves maybe surrounded with relationships that reflect that and really don't work for us.
Can I ask, is there a specific organization that you work with that you'd like to mention on the show? Maybe we can help with that effort?
Yeah, so we're kind of closing the doors on our nonprofit, just because we've all sort of, since we started the community,
it's in the book,
sort of like blew up and got really intense, and it was great. But we all myself and the other administrators have kind of started doing our own things. But there is a wonderful, wonderful person in this field named Shannon Thomas. And she is actually a therapist, like a real therapist. And she writes books on this topic. And she's also one of like the nicest humans I've ever met. And she is starting a nonprofit as well. So I couldn't think of a better person if you were ever interested. It would mean a lot.
If you can forward us the information, we would definitely love to put some information on our website to include with our post to let people know that, you know, if you're buying this book, some of the proceeds will go in helping this particular organization with helping, you know, LGBT youth, et cetera. And I think that would be amazing. So thank you.
It's officially on sale now, right?
I think, I don't know what time zone it comes on sale, but it's like, it's Tuesday, whenever that is.
Yeah. So tonight this is going on sale. So, luckily we got an advanced copy. Oh, I don't know if I want to say luckily, but I mean, it's an amazing book. Don't get me wrong, but so it's going on sale on Amazon. We'll put all of the links on our post and we will share it everywhere. But is there anything else? I mean, I could talk to you for hours. We'll probably end up talking again.
I have a last question.
Oh, sorry.
So, before wrapping up, obviously, you know, I want to give you an opportunity to tell our readers if there's one thing and one thing that they can take from this book that you think will help them for the rest of their life, what is it and how can they apply it in their life?
I would say that looking back at my own time when things felt really dark is that no matter where you are in this process, even if it's really scary and you have no idea what's about to happen, it is a rocky road, but the reason I wrote this book and the reason I just keep trying to tell people as much as I can is that the end result is something amazing and indescribable. And I think we feel our bodies and minds light up when we remember who we truly are and we start to let go of those lies that hold us back. It takes a long time and takes a lot of work, but in the end, you'll be so glad for it. And it's just, I really want to say thank you guys for taking the time. This has been one of the most fun talks I've had. And certainly if you have any readers who are having financial challenges or anything like that, and they're interested in the book, just let me know. I've got a bunch of copies and I'm happy to send them any which way.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sure. So just to wrap up, you know, again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to come on and talk to us and tell us a little bit about your book and how this amazing book will help people. And the experience of writing it in itself has helped you, you know, and to our readers, you know, again, the book is called Whole Again. It is going to be available as of tomorrow, right? Because it's Tuesday.
Yep.
And we'll have all of the information definitely available on our website. It'll be on the post for tonight's episode, which is going to feature, of course, yourself. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for really taking time out of your day to talk to us and give us a really well-rounded experience and view on the book that you have written that really could and has an opportunity to really help a lot of people.
Thank you guys. It's been really great talking with you.
And, you know, as always, if you're writing anything else, if you're doing anything,
somebody else is going to read it because I can't do another one.
Definitely, you know, reach out to us. Let us know. We're more than welcome. You have an open invitation to come back and see us on the show anytime you'd like. And, you know, we'll be more than happy to help you in your endeavors as well, because what you're doing is helping other people. And that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Before we sign off, though, where can our listeners find you on social media, or where can they find the book? Just go ahead and plug yourself.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
On Facebook, actually on everything, Facebook, Twitter, and the website is all Psychopath Free. And then the website is psychopathfree.com. I never really made like an author bio. I think I was supposed to do that as part of the the pre-publishing thing, but we've obviously passed that point. But you'll also... I will say on the Facebook page, there's like 500,000 followers on there now. So you'll find tons of people that you can interact with and talk with. if you're into sharing and you want to make some friends and stuff. So really recommend stopping by if you're interested.
Oh, we share. And we're friends now. I actually sent him a friend's request today and I sent him a message. Super excited to have you on the show and to talk. So definitely. So I'll send you the link and everything, all the information on tonight's episode so that you could share that if you'd like as well with your people. And we'll do the same on our end.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll definitely be posting this. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it was wonderful. We can't wait to talk again. Mm-hmm. You're part of the Gay Talk family now. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry.
Awesome. You're in trouble now. So
you're going to get a lot of emails.
So again, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your day to speak with us. It is amazing. Again, to all of our peeps, the book is called Whole Again. It will be available on tonight's episode. All the information will be there. The book is available as of tomorrow. And we're super excited. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Bye. Thank you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jackson McKenzie again. You know, the book Whole Again is going to be available tonight and, tomorrow. We'll make sure to post everything on there for you guys so that you guys could actually have an opportunity to pick up a copy for yourself. We're super excited. We'll reach out to them and get information on any type of organizations or anyone that's actually, working with them and people that can help. And, you know, just, being amazing. This is absolutely an amazing, amazing experience to be able to actually speak to someone and get details.
Did I not tell you that was going to be intense?
Yeah, you warned me.
I warned everybody.
When I walked in, I heard Trish open the door. I was going to the front door, so I walked back. And I was like, hey, Trish. She's like, it's going to be intense today. I was like, oh, it's great. I haven't seen you for a month. I'm happy to hear those were the first words I hear from you.
But you know what? You know what's funny is, you know, you said it, you know, and I called you. I sent you screenshots of this book while I was reading it.
Oh, yeah, she was sending you that, yeah.
And it's so true, though. I mean, like, the LGBTQ community as individuals, we have gone through so much. And so mm-hmm. we bring so much into relationships. And we don't realize what that actually does to other individuals when we bring it into those relationships. And this book does so much to teach you what that actually means and what you've been through is actually impacting your life and finding love and actually healing the wounds that mm-hmm. were probably there from day one that you just didn't realize. And it's intense.
Or didn't want to realize.
And like I said at the end of the interview, I was like, you know, I'm not going to read the next book. Of course I will. But the point is it's like when you commit to reading something mm-hmm. like this, you're committing to actually looking at yourself and saying, oh, yeah, no, I have a wound and I've got to look at that wound because that's affecting the relationships in my life. And how do I heal that wound? And oh, that's funny. What's so, so important and beautiful about this book.
And we know she has a wound. She has many of them. But
I love watching her hit the
I know, I keep doing
she's,
it. Keep
she's
doing
like, it. She like hits the Mevo, the camera we have in the studio.
It's for, been so long since I've seen listeners. This. So.
And it's, she like zooms out for everything and then zooms in. Oh, we know.
No, but, you know, and of course to Jackson McKenzie, because I know
who is beautiful, by the way.
Yeah, I know, I sent the text. You know, it's like, yo, he's cute.
You took it out of my arena because, you know, I'm the one that always was like, oh my God, he's hot.
I'm like sitting here like, this is going to be an intense conversation, but I can't stop staring in your eyes.
I literally like messaged them like, he's hot.
My God.
I will say this. So to Jackson, my apologies if you thought that at some point in time I was sort of kind of like zoning out and, moving away
he's
from
got a lot
the conversation. I have a lot going on here. So I've got this soundboard here. So this particular thing that I moved over from this corner sort of kind of controls, right? So if I hit this button, you're looking at this bitch.
Hi.
Then if I hit this button, you're looking at this bitch.
Yavol.
And if I hit this button, you're looking at me. And then
this bitch. That bitch.
The bitch.
Oh. Yeah, the bitch. The bitch. Facts.
And then if I hit this button, you see us all. And we hold hands.
Us bitches.
And we sing Kumbaya.
Kumbaya, you bitch.
I just sing Whole Again.
Yeah, no, but either way, so I hope you didn't think that was disrespectful. It's just that I sort of kind of have to make sure that all these buttons are going.
I thought it was disrespectful.
Because, you know what?
No, honestly, I think that conversation was so intense that
when we were in it,
it just like...
No, and you know, I even though I'm in the conversation, I'm definitely, you know, in tune of what's going on. I just still have to press buttons. buttons.
Okay. And go all here. Right, with your buttons.
So anyway, so back, we still have some stories that we would like to cover. So I would like to kick it off to Trish because, Chris.
What about me?
I forgot about him.
Chris did a story. I'm here. I'm here. I am here.
And he's queer. And so I'm going to kick it off to you, baby girl, so that you can go ahead and talk about your story.
So everybody knows that I love Ellen. I love her. Oh, like, my God. Dearly. But this week, I'm not very happy with her.
So I'm happy with her. You're not happy with her. A lot of people are not happy with her.
That I'm not happy with her. I think she just overlooked something.
I think we need to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? Because, again, it is important to realize where she's coming from. A lot of people may not have agreed with what she did. I'm speaking cursive.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't think I disagree with what she did. I think what she did was support somebody who needed the support and who actually is a genuinely, supposedly, he's famous, so we don't know, a good person. But Kevin Hart did, in the past, put out some really negative tweets about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And the problem here is not that Ellen said, hey, this is okay and we forgive you, because everybody keeps saying she doesn't speak for the entire LGBTQ community. But what was
honestly, she doesn't.
No, but correct. But what really hit me was when Don Lemon was talking about it, and we've talked about it on the show. We've talked about homosexuality in the Hispanic community. We've also talked about it in the African American community.
That's right.
In general, minority communities, it's harder to come out and be
much harder.
Be gay, because there's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of stigma around homosexuality, no matter what. But in minority communities, they've already been put down for so much of their life that the masculine within those communities doesn't want to see any other individual hurt in any other way. So their way to fix homosexuality is to push masculinity on those individuals.
Correct.
Which pushes them out of the home, right? So, or pushes negativity about their sexuality on them at a young age. And so what Don Lemon was talking about was they didn't take into account the fact that Kevin Hart has a platform in which he still hasn't really apologized. And there are so many kids out there that he could be saying, if my son was gay, I wouldn't care. But that's not what his tweets said. He never apologized for the tweets that he said about what he would do if his child actually came out as gay. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where this is all coming from. But the main thing about it is the fact that the African American community, specifically in this instance, really, really got shot in the heart, because Kevin Hart had a platform to apologize and make a statement about what it means to be a father of a son who potentially could or could not be gay, or daughter who could or cannot be gay, and stand up for them instead of put them down. And what he did was walk around an apology.
And I agree with you 100%. He did walk around that apology. But I think we need to understand where Ellen is coming from, right? Ellen has always, since her inception, since her show, has always said, love one another, show compassion to one another. And
unless it's Donald Trump.
Unless it's Donald Trump, right? But, you know, be the change that you want to see in life. So by her reaching out to Kevin, we don't know if she had a private conversation with him.
She did. He called her.
This is going to be a teaching moment for both of us. I'm going to learn from you and you're going to learn from me. Right?
Yeah.
And so based on that conversation, which, by the way, none of us are privy to, there may be a possibility that, you know what, he may have genuinely had a conversation with her that could put him on the right track.
I will say, if he is allowed to host any award show, he has a huge opportunity.
To make it right.
To make it right. I mean, because he can stand up and say, you know, I don't care. This is my son. You know, I may have said things in the past, but at the end of the day, my love for my son is going to change, is going to be there, and I'm never going to walk away from my child. Mm-hmm. And
you're right.
And I think that's what was missing in the whole statement here is that there have been so many. I mean, in this, if you have a chance to watch Don Lemon, I mean, we talk all the time about homelessness in the LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. and especially the youth. But when you look at minorities and when you look at the African American community, the percentage, and we already know that our percentage as LGBTQ community is smaller. But the highest homelessness percentage,
absolutely,
within the minority, it jumps. So you look at within the percentage that's already homeless in the LGBTQ community, and you look at the Hispanics, and you look at African Americans, and it's even higher. And that's because of the culture in which they're raised, and that's okay.
Which is why admire the Jordans, right? Michael Jordan, his son.
Oh yeah,
it's
Michael
amazing.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Michael Jordan, his son is actually very queer positive in the community and very androgynous when it comes
to...
Are
you talking about
the basketball player? No, the basketball player, Michael Jordan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
His son is very queer focused, very queer in your face. And he is an absolute gem to see. And the fact that the Jordans are so supportive of their son, it is absolutely amazing.
But that's the type of thing we need. And when you have somebody who has a platform like this...
You do.
Right.
So, but I will say, I want to go.
And I'm not slamming on him for his past. I'm slamming on him for not apologizing.
And he should. And I think that, you know, what Ellen is saying is we should give him an opportunity to do so.
Because, and also remember.
He's had the opportunity.
Right. That is true. But also remember, Ellen went through this, the hardship of coming out. Remember when we had.
Work for years.
Yeah. When we had Melissa Etheridge on the show, she talked about her and Rosie sitting down and how for Melissa, I can call her Melissa.
I've hugged her.
I've hugged her.
Etheridge is pretty nasty, but it's Melissa.
She talked about how she was able to come out because she was so rock and roll, but Ellen and Rosie, they were TV stars, and it was terrifying for these people to come out.
That's right. So what I wanted to bring forward was, for example, as members of the LGBT community, it is our responsibility to try to, in some way, shape, or form, sometimes very sassy, educate people on who we are, what we're all about, and why we deserve to be here, and why we deserve a chance to have equal rights, and all of that goodness that comes with the fight that we fight every day. We had a situation with a fellow gay man who was in a bar, and we were outside. We were having a cigarette. You remember we were having this conversation in one of our episodes?
I don't.
And where two very queer people, very, very feminine people were walking down the sidewalk, and one of our gay patrons made a comment, and you flipped out on him. And you went off on him, and you took the opportunity at some point to sort of kind of roll it back and explain to him why that was wrong. And I think that's where Ellen is coming from. She is, as a member of the LGBT community, taking an opportunity to say, Kevin, roll it back, baby boy. We need to have a conversation. This is wrong.
That's not what it felt like to me when I saw the interview. Well, but I didn't know. I haven't heard any of the, you know, their personal conversations.
So we don't know. So what we're getting, on top of the fact that it's very controversial, we're getting an exasperated version of what social media wants Kevin to do, or what social media thinks Kevin should do right now, mm-hmm. right away, right?
Yeah, I think it's I think it's important that, like, yeah,
it takes time.
Yeah, I think my problem with I fucking love Ellen, but like my problem with her interview with him was it was very much boastful. It was things happen. There are haters out there, but there are so many others that love you, and. I think she flipped that the wrong way. I don't think it's about haters. I think she just didn't see where, in fact, he hurt a community that she's not a part of.
And I agree with you, and I think that she probably went about it the wrong way. What I want to point out is that I think that her heart was in the right place.
Oh, always. Her heart is always in the right place. That's why I'm not slamming her. I love Ellen. We know I love Ellen.
Oh, my God.
I just watched her stand-up last week, too.
So good.
Oh, my God. I was
dying. It's so good.
And it's so clean.
Yes.
She's clean.
Relatable. but yeah, like, just to get back to it, I think, like, what was so powerful about the moment
We are going through it on Gay Talk.
Don Lemon literally said, you know, it's not, it's about life or death. It's and that's such a strong statement. But at the end of the day, it's kind of true.
It's a very true statement.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about and I'm a Latino.
And he has a responsibility. In the limelight, he has a responsibility.
He has a responsibility, but he is also a straight man, and he's human. And as we know, I'm not excusing his behavior.
Neither am I. And I'm also not slamming him either.
Shame on you. No, I will slam him. Shame on you for even thinking that. You have a platform, and you have a responsibility to make what you've done wrong, make it right.
Mm-hmm.
You do have that responsibility. However, we also need to see. Here's the thing, right? Things happen.
I wasn't even going to talk about this because this happened a while ago.
No, it did happen a while ago, but it's important. Things happen, and because of social media and the way things fly off the cuff, right? It's like instantaneous. The world over knows about it, and the whole situation gets really exaggerated beyond the point of resolution, yeah. Right? So, what happens if I were Kevin Hart? And I said something 5 years ago, and all of a sudden Twitter's blowing up and things are being said and the world is going nuts over what I'm saying.
Yeah.
My first reaction to be is to pull away and hide.
And that's what he kind of did. But like, here's the thing, right?
Why? So it's a protective thing.
Yeah, of course. But here's the
thing.
We
do it all the time.
Yeah. I'm not saying he did what he did was wrong. I think bowing out was the appropriate measure, with the exception that I'm pretty sure the Academy called him and said, hey, if you make an official apology, mm-hmm. then we won't remove you as host. And he said, no, I won't make an official apology. So that in there lies the issue, right? Again, I think Kevin Hart is talented. I think he's great. I think he would be a great host. I think he needs to use his platform in a different way. And I think that he knows that he needs to. And the fact that he has support within the LGBTQ community is evidence enough that he has the he should be standing up and saying, look, I don't give a shit if my son or daughter is gay. I don't give a shit if anybody is gay. I love everybody equally. Yeah, I said some shitty stuff on Twitter. I'm a comedian. And I know that doesn't excuse it, but it was said.
But I think,
and I need you to know that I support everybody.
I think that, you know, in order for that to happen, it has to happen on his time.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Neil Patrick Harris needs to open the show with him, and they need to do some type of musical number
exactly,
with him.
Exactly,
being,
like, for example, Eminem and freaking Elton John, when they opened up and they did a number in the freak on the
Kevin Hart
Grammys.
needs to be flown in with feathers and shit,
exactly,
and then and Neil Patrick Harris needs to walk out and be like, honey, you needed to apologize, but that's a little much.
That's like, mine. I agree. So listen, all right, so we've got other stories.
No, we
got
to wrap this up.
Yeah, wrap it up.
We have one more story. I need to run, but you guys can handle this next story. Because
what story?
There's one more in here.
Oh my gosh.
What?
There's like 12 more.
Yeah, that's true.
Talk about the wrestler guy. I'll be right back.
Go for it. Oh my God, I was not prepared to talk about this. No, I'm not going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about something else. So, India.
She ain't here. She can't do nothing about
I know.
It.
But what's really exciting, though, is that India's first openly gay prince opens the country's first LGBTQA center in Palace.
Look at that.
It's amazing.
Because India, correct me if I'm wrong, but they decriminalized homosexual or same-sex. Last year, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about that on the show.
They re-examined Article 377, a law that makes having homosexual relations illegal in India.
Right, exactly.
And it is no longer illegal, from my understanding of this article. However, the prince does go on to say that a lot of LGBTQ youth and community members have faced, when coming out to family members, not only loss, because in a lot of families, they have family businesses that they're a part of, they have family money, so they're completely cut off. So they're not only facing homelessness, but they're facing being completely broke.
Right.
So what this person, what this prince, Manvendra, he is creating an LGBTQ center for individuals just to support, you know, community and life. And it's beautiful. And it's the first thing, it's the first one in India. And on top of all of that, what's really amazing is there are 8 rooms. There are 8 bedrooms for those individuals that are kicked out of their homes. Whether they stay there for a night or 2 nights, there's a place for them to go.
What did I miss?
So they're not going to be on the streets.
So they're not going to be on the street. And it'd probably just be like a night, a week until they find, you know, a better place for them.
Right.
But he's creating a room in which, or a space in which there is, that people can go when they have no home, when they are kicked out of their home and they have no money, but they need a bed and a place to lay their head.
And this is in India?
This is in India.
That's amazing. And by the way, India just recently passed.
He's going to say what we just said.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
My apologies. I had to run because I had to pee like a racehorse. I did wash my hands. They're a little wet, so I'm drying them off. But anyway, no, it's amazing.
No, it's really amazing.
I did read the story earlier.
And I mean, we could go on and on, but we should really just wrap it up.
All right. So on that note, boys, thank you so much. I'm so happy that we're all back together in the studio again.
It's nice. The show just gets longer and longer.
I know. So we'll cut all of it off. Anyway. All right. So we've got two more things that we're going to talk about, and then we'll bring it home and take it out.
All right, everybody. So this week's Gay Talk term brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
I still got it.
Is rat somebody's mind. So obviously I picked this because of the book, but rat somebody's mind is to play psychological chess or to disturb another's mental orderliness, to bewilder. So this week's Gay Talk term brought to you by UnicornBooty.com is rat somebody's mind.
Not really. But it is. Christopher.
Oh, it's my turn for this.
It is.
Did Trish do this while I was gone?
Yes, he did.
So much work.
Did you not listen?
Super busy.
Silence.
So, back to normal on this day in gay history, brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com
and Chris Mattoon.
I was just about to say that. I was like, I'm actually bringing it back today.
Not
so,
really.
On this day in gay history, when January 7th, 1973, here in the U.S. of A., the greatest country in the United States of America.
That's questionable right now. But go ahead.
The New York Times reports that a man adopted his partner for tax benefits. So, yeah, exactly, right?
What? Like,
so Jack Baker and Mike McConnell, not Mitch McConnell, fuck her. Jack Baker and Mike McConnell had applied for a marriage license in Minnesota in 1970 and were denied. They sued, but their case was dismissed.
Of course.
Today's New York Times reported that McConnell adopted Baker in 1971, quote, with the goal of securing tax inheritance advantages.
There you go.
And by the way, after some of the laws that were passed in 2018, that inheritance tax is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Nada. Nada, nada, nada. Anyway, so we're going to continue to bring this home, are we? It's my turn?
Yeah.
All right, surely. Ladies and gents, you already know the drill. If you love the show, make sure that you go rate and review on your favorite podcasting
Please
service.
Please do.
Please definitely do that. We've been getting actually a lot of likes on our iTunes. We're up to like 80 now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I just want some more reviews. I mean, tell me what I'm doing
definitely
wrong.
More. Yeah, tell her what she's doing wrong. Definitely. Definitely do that. All right, so anyway, this helps others know about our show, and it also ensures that it becomes more visible within the podcasting community. By subscribing to our show, you get the latest and greatest of our amazing trio delivered right to your favorite device.
Because we're all together again.
That's right. You can also support us on Patreon. Those that do already know that we have a video live stream version of the show that's actually available only to Patreon subscribers. And
unless it's Christmas.
That's right. And Patreon is a service that allows you, our subscribers, to actually donate to the show, make a donation, which we collect monthly and can be in any denomination of $1 or more. Christopher?
Yes, it's my turn to make an announcement. You get to hear me talk again.
Can Next... you mute her mic?
Do it. Next week, we're very excited to welcome back Dr. Evan Goldstein to talk about this month's installment of Tales from the Tale.
I'm excited.
And Trish and I are hoping to go see the doctor eventually.
Let's not hope. Let's make it happen.
We're going this month.
Yeah.
Yay!
So just to tag on that a little bit. So we are not doing From Top to Bottom this month because of the holidays. We all got a little backed up. But
right.
We will be doing Tales from the Tale, which is super exciting.
That's kind
backed
of a pun.
Up.
Yeah, there's a pun there!
yeah. And thank you to our guest, Jackson McKenzie, author of Whole Again, Healing Your Heart and Rediscovering Your True Self After Toxic Relationships and Emotional Abuse. My life.
Give me the book so I can show it over
for joining us today on for joining us on today's show. It was wonderful speaking with him. All his information will be posted on today's episode on our website. Right. Blah, 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 blah. Christopher.
Is it my turn? Can we put a fucking rubber on this?
Do you have like four of them?
I mean, I'm already pregnant. So
I need protection from her.
We're going to go ahead and put a rubber on this.
Please. All right, let's do this.
I'm so happy to say this. All righty, folks. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces, for the first time in this section, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at GayTalk 2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can do so by going to our website and clicking on the Contact Us tab, which is located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, you can leave questions for the cast or for an individual host, which will most likely be Chris now that he's
I'm back. Send me emails. Lord. I want to talk to you people.
You can also call us on our Gay Talk hotline, right? It is 334 Gay Talk. Those numbers, if you need those, because you don't have one of those TTY phones, right? Is that what
T9? It's keep going.
Yeah. Anyway, 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that live stream is available on digitalstreamradio.com. Cursive! And ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a fantastic night. Bye! Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.